Hi, and welcome to the Red Tunic Podcast, a podcast where I look to rediscover what makes gaming fun and enjoyable by having positive conversations with those related to the industry. My name is Link, and today I'm joined by Ben Reichstein, sound designer that has contributed to projects such as Stellar Valkyrie, Call of Sir Ragnar, Combustion, and Skywind. Hi, Ben. How are you doing today?
Hi, Link. I'm doing pretty well. How about you?
I'm doing all right. It's just after 8 a.m., the beginning of a long weekend for me because I took the day off. So, you know, it's a good day for me, I suppose. You know, I don't have anything outside of speaking with you. I don't have anything pressing or really on my plate. So it's a great day.
That sounds like a perfect day, yeah. Yeah, me too. I just have finish up a bunch of tasks after this, and then I'm out to record some stuff in the wild, something I've been looking forward to. So, yeah, start of a great weekend.
And, you know, that's great to hear. I'm glad that, you know, you're going to have a start to a great weekend. And I heard from, you know, your podcast that you do, Field and Foley, I believe is the proper order. I apologize if it's the other way around.
That's the right one, yeah.
Awesome. I'm glad I got the order correct. That you know, one of the things that you do is you have like a Google map and you plot out where you want to go and all that. And I thought that was a really interesting thing. And so hopefully, I don't know if that's the case in this time when you're going to be trying to get, you know, recording stuff, but hopefully you have like a nice, let's say walk or what have you plotted out. So like, you know, it'll also not just be strictly getting out there to record stuff, bang, 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 location to location, but you know, a relaxing time in between recordings, if that makes sense contextually.
Yeah, it does make sense. But for today, it's like a one spot, one shot thing, because I'm recording like a signal flare, like the ones you hold in your hand, just like in Alan Wake. And I've found hopefully a good spot where no one is bothered under like a bridge. So it should be visually pleasing because we always also be filming this and making photos. And I'd be needing that specific sound for Combustion for a specific thing. So it's like not a relaxing thing, but it's something I'm looking forward to because it's probably going to look cool and hopefully sound cool as well.
You know, that's good. And hopefully it works out for you. I myself have not had a whole lot of reasons, I should say, to go out of my way to try and have to like record audio for things. Largely in my case, you know, it was very small things, but I did a project. I shouldn't say a project. I helped a friend out years and years ago in high school, which is like a whole lifetime ago at this point. You know, I'm 35, where we had to use like an air horn, and we ended up getting the police called on us. However, it was right after we finished filming and the police came up to the person's house we were filming at and we had all basically gone and they were just like, what's this call? We had like a report of like kids running around like idiots blasting an air horn away around and all this kind of stuff. So hopefully what I'm getting at is hopefully that doesn't happen to you. I imagine as an adult, people are more inclined to just think you're doing something for other reasons. Whereas, you know, if you're a kid running around with a flare or an air horn, they assume you're an idiot doing something dangerous that needs to be, needs some adulting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, hopefully. And as I said, I have a friend of mine with me that films me. So it should look at least semi-professional. So hopefully that's also a bonus.
Fingers crossed for you. Like, I don't know what the police are like in Germany to respond to that stuff. I don't know what they're like.
It's technically legal, so hopefully there won't be no issues at all, but you never know. I mean, someone could mistake it for a fire or something and then call them. So yeah, I will tell you how it went.
Awesome. Thank you. And you know, hopefully no one mistakes it for a fire. Right now, actually, I don't know. Like, it's probably not bad for you. However, I have heard in the news that it's affecting Europe, but like there's some massive fires just like 20, 30, an hour north of me kind of thing right now. That's like blanketing the entire North American continent, more or less, in like thick smoke. And earlier in the week, a lot of that smoke went straight up into like the stratosphere and then shifted over to Europe. I don't think it's affecting you, but what I'm getting at is, I imagine if someone saw one of us running around with a flare here, it would be a very high panic, just because we already have enough fires.
Yeah, I see. You're already in the state of alertness then. Yeah. Yeah, hopefully we don't have that in the near future, but I feel it's getting closer and closer to where I live as well. So yeah, we'll see.
So Ben, before we get started as well, not to shift from, you know, having a nice little pleasant conversation here, but would you mind telling me and anyone that's listening a little bit about yourself, just so we have a better idea of who you are?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Ben, as you already heard, and I'm turning 40 next year, and I've been, for most of my career, I've been a programmer. So I've learned programming as my first like job, and I've been a programmer for, I think, 13, 14 years or something. And about 6 years ago, I started to shift into sound design. Still in transition phase, but now I'm doing it professionally as well. I have my own little company, and especially doing sound design for video games, and even more especially like the niche of a niche, I'm very, very interested and passionate about field recording. That means like going out into nature or somewhere special and recording stuff you can't record in a studio, like a waterfall, for example, or explosions. And also the Foley part, which is, it used to be that movies got live synchronized by people just making the sounds while the movie without sound played. And later on it was like, or still is, that for big movies you have a Foley department that does all the, I would say, non-sound effect sounds. So like footsteps, doors opening, clothes rustling, stuff like that is considered Foley. And this is also, in my opinion, something that should be used more in games, and it's been used more in the last few years, especially. Like a good example is the newest God of War, the Ragnarok one, that had like a whole Foley team just for that, and I think you can really feel the difference if you have like this whole soundscape and it's like really grounded in reality. Because yeah, the best sounds are the ones you don't notice. So if you don't like, if nothing special pops out, if it's not like some kind of effect or a monster, then usually it's great sound design, because it grounds you more in the world, and that's something that I'm always enjoying. Like the heightening the immersion in games and being a part of that is very rewarding to me.
You know, thank you for sharing that, and that's like great to hear. And you know, for some people that might not know a whole lot about that, about like, you know, the field recording or just recording sounds in general, or Foley especially, it's a wild thing to learn about, just how innovative might be the wrong word. I can't think of the right word, but how crazy, I'm just going to go with that, how crazy it can be to do some of those things. Like, you know, like you said, recording a door opening and closing, that's pretty straightforward. You know, obviously there is more nuance to it, because you know, you don't always want the same just generic door open and close sound and what have you. It's obviously something that you have to have an idea how to know how to mix, how to properly like set up everything for. Like anything that, you know, has a professional touch, it's never as straightforward as that. But the Foley for me, and I learned about Foley stuff when I was much younger, and it blew my mind. Like, for example, like walking in snow, how it's usually like a sock full of like cornstarch being smacked against a hand. Or famously, the Monty Python Quest for the Holy Grail, where they're galloping on horses and it's just the coconuts going in rhythm, right?
yes.
Yeah. You know, so what I'm getting is, like, anyone who doesn't know what Foley is or have a more better idea, like, Foley is absolutely wild. And like you said, it's so important to help, like, it's invisible almost. Like, you don't notice it when it's there, but you notice it when it's not. And it's absolutely wild to think of just all, like, the what you have to do to help people be grounded in that reality. And like, it's not as simple as just like going and recording, stepping in snow and such, because, you know, if you need snow sounds in the middle of like June, you know, where are you going to get snow sound, right?
Yeah. Also, like, bringing that stuff into your studio, it's going to melt quickly. And if you don't record it in the studio, then you have all the other sounds from outside. So that's also always, like, a thing. For example, I recognized this problem with bird songs. The first time I recorded birds for Call of Saragna, I was, like, going out and trying to record birds. And I got everything with the birds. But getting, like, singular bird chirps or songs was, like, impossible with the equipment I had. And I realized that, oh, for games especially, there's something, like, this special requirement that you'll need a lot of variations of one sound because it might be played, like, 100 times. And it's tied to some kind of animation or to some kind of model, for example, like a bird flying above you. And it's a bit different than from movies where you have, like, the soundscapes and you can work a bit more, I would say, like, freely with more recordings and don't need as much of those singular things. But, yeah, for example, if you do a creature for a movie, you might have, like, this one creature fight with this one special creature for 15 minutes and then it's over. But for a game, this could be a creature that has, like, 40, 50, 60 different sounds because it has, like, pain and it has, like, panic and has, like, death sounds and anger sounds and startled sounds. And then there might be three or four variations of that creature with, like, a poison attack or, like, a dark version or something else. So you need a lot more and you need a lot more of them isolated. And that's where, like, the field and Foley recording really, like, opened up to me and got interesting. And, yeah, that's where, like, the craft comes in and where you have to, like, find out how to record certain things or how to maybe even fake certain things. Because that's also one other thing that's always interesting about Foley. Foley is not about making it sound realistic, because if you record realistic sounds, all of them realistic in a movie, people wouldn't buy the movie. Like, they wouldn't be immersed, because we are, for example, used to when someone pulls out a sword to that shing sound that you hear. And with a real sword, I actually bought a real sword to make some sword sounds, and I was, like, really excited. And the first time I handled it, I was like, right, yeah, real sounds don't sound like that, and especially not like in the old samurai movies. So there's, like, a special sword. It's called, like, a Foley sword, which is essentially just a thin metal bent, and so it vibrates and swings a lot more. So if you pick this one up, then it sounds just like in the movies, just like that ringing sound. But it's totally not the sword you see on screen, never. And the same thing with, for example, with pistols in movies, for example. We have this preconceived notion of how loud and how crazy those pistols sound. And in reality, they don't sound just like that. And also then there's the problem of how do you record it, because every microphone records something different and it's not the same thing you hear in your ear. And then you have the whole thing of I could go on forever. I mean, there's also psychoacoustics involved, and sometimes depending on context, sounds do sound different, and you as a viewer expect them to sound different. And it's a crazy rabbit hole to go into.
So, you know, thank you for explaining that. And, you know, that's I had no idea about the, like, I knew, you know, the swords don't make that sound, especially, like, you know, if you watch, like, a medieval movie and they're pulling it over, like, a leather sheath, you know, it's obviously not going to make that nice shing sound. But I didn't know that they actually made, like, a Foley sword just for the shing, just for the sounds of the swinging, the what have you. Yeah. And, you know, so, yeah, thank you. I didn't, you know, it's, like I said, it's, on the surface, recording sounds is very simple to people that have no idea. You know, and then when you start to hear about everything that goes into having to work it out or, like, isolating or what have you, you quickly realize, like any profession, that it is incredibly not as simple or as straightforward as you would otherwise have thought or maybe even hoped, you know? So thank you for explaining that. Now, I do want to ask this, you know, I don't know, I imagine this is going to go in a different way perchance, just because, like you said, you started as a programmer and then you moved into doing sound design and, you know, for now for games. So, like, how did you get into you know, working with games then? Was it, you know, was it originally with the programming, or was the programming entirely separate? And then now the sound work is how you've kind of taken that avenue or what have you.
Okay. So how did I get into games? Yeah, I would say from the early point on in my teens or something, I'd always loved games, but I never imagined myself like doing something in games. And I always wanted to be doing something with computers because, that's something that interested me. And I had like a knack for like just sitting in front of the screen for hours and figuring something out, and then either like building something or configuring something or finding something. And that was always my passion, but I never like really thought I could do games. I wasn't as, I would say, I wouldn't think highly of myself in terms of skill, I would say. So I would always think that that would be like a job for a real professional with like 20 years of experience, and that's nothing I could ever do. And then I never thought about that. But I started with, actually, when I think about it, probably Half-Life 1. Yeah, building some maps in the Half-Life 1 editor and building levels and feeling like, oh, there are tools out there for people that don't know all this math and all that stuff you apparently need to know, or I thought you needed to know. And then I started to build maps and got into the whole programming of, you could do like events and stuff like that. So if you walk through that door, then light goes on or sound plays or stuff like that. So that was always interesting to me. But then for a long time, I didn't like really do anything. And it really started then with Skywind. After I've gotten into doing sound design, I was looking for a first like bigger project to do. And I found Skywind, which is a mod in Skyrim that tries to, or will recreate the whole of Morrowind. And Morrowind is one of my favorite games of all time. So I just saw that they were looking for sound designers. I sent them my reel, like, this is the stuff I recorded. I want to be part of the team. And the sound team lead back then was really nice and said, yeah, your stuff is pretty good. We can work with you. And he gave me excellent notes on my first few recordings, and I got better and better and got into it. And so, yeah, that was my first project, like doing this mod. And it got to a point where I then became like the sound team lead. So I would bring new people on board and would like steer more stuff and like flesh out ideas with other people. And that's like, I think that was like the real start of it all, because it is so much fun. And it is like a dream project to work on, because it's a big IP. It's not like you can just start working on the God of War. But for me, it was like, yeah, like my Magnus Open project. I mean, if I could like, choose my projects, rebuilding Morrowind would be like most probably on the top of my list. And then I started, to really get this pull in me that I wanted to do sound for games, and that's what I wanted to do. And it got more and more intense. I got more into microphones, different microphones, techniques, and starting to do stuff like that. And then I found this project on Twitter, Call of Zeregna, which is like this 90s-inspired, almost like Betrayal of Krondor reimagining. I mean, new story, new world, but it's like the same core values, and it has this very special look and feel to it that already grabbed my attention. And the lead developer, Damian, has an excellent composer named Tony Manfredonia, who does excellent orchestral score. So it was like already looking and sounding amazing, but the sound effect was, yeah, like just stock sound effects. And I was like really wanting to improve the game. So I just wrote him out of a whim and said, hey, I really wanted to take part in this project. Do you have a spot for a sound designer? You don't need to pay me. I just want to make like this project happen. And yeah, that's how it started in the beginning. And now, but we now like have a real contract, and it's going, and it's a passion project of mine. And that's how it all started. And yeah, it went on from there.
So thank you for sharing that. And it's really interesting, because I think a lot of people at some point or another had the same kind of like mindset or the view for what it is that makes a game maker, right? That, like, it has to be this person that is crazy smart, that knows how to do, you know, all of the physics, math, and all of this stuff. And, like, from, you know, especially back then, you know, now I think it's a little more approachable or easier to learn how approachable it can be. And I don't mean that in a negative way when I say that, like, to people getting into it now or what have you. But, you know, it's just, you know, you're turning 40, I'm 35, you know, so I'm speaking of like 20 years ago, like a much longer time ago, where, you know, RPG Maker or Bust was really like the only thing you could download that was like freely available in the public space for just like people like you or me, or using like the map maker and learning how to use the map makers and like the minimal documentation that you may or may not find for it. Or, you know, like a previous guest going to the developers and saying, hey, we want to make maps for your game. Can you put out the map editor you use? It would be fantastic and easy for it. Like, all of that was stuff that, you know, wasn't, it would like it wasn't as easily available, and you had to go to the dev team to be like, hey, can you guys like just help us out? We want to help support make stuff. So like being turned off by the idea of it back then, and thinking you had to have like all this like knowledge or confidence in yourself to think that you could get better or what have you, was, you know, was I presume common enough. Whereas now, you know, I'm happy that it's far more approachable, because we're getting some wild stuff, and we're getting some like people that probably were in the same shoes as us going, wait, I can just use visual coding to do this, or I can use this, like I can use Unity and all these nice plugins, or like what have you. Like, it's, you know, what I'm getting at is like, I understand where you're coming from. I imagine a lot of other people do, as well as I'm happy that like the world kind of is different in terms of people getting into it, so they don't have to feel that way moving forward. And then, you know, like moving into sound design and like getting that kind of, what it sounds like, a big break, so to say, getting to work on like a passion project with Skywind and such, like, you know, just thank you for sharing the where it started and how it kind of where it is now kind of thing. You know, it's really, it's neat, and it's nice to hear. Because like it can easily give hope to people that might be in a similar position. Now, Ben, I will ask this because this is kind of like the other side of that coin. Do you have any words of wisdom that you can share from your experiences from getting from the beginning to now?
Yeah. I really don't consider myself like someone spreading wisdom, but I think most people don't. So there's always like probably that thing of perspective. So I have maybe a different perspective than other people. So maybe something helps. But the first thing that instantly comes to mind is the old saying, don't be afraid to ask, because we are always probably inherently somewhat afraid or something of getting a negative reaction. And I found out, I mean, especially for the sound community, this just blew me away. I've been in a lot of like communities over the years, like in special games or in like doing some activities or something where you like are in a group, but the sound community is especially open and welcoming. So you already mentioned that I have my podcast, like this Feed and Foley recording podcast. And my plan was to record like maybe 3 or 4 episodes before I go live. So I have a bit of a backlog. And I thought, okay, I maybe write like 10 or 11 people. So hopefully a few of them say yes. And every single one of them said yes. And it was from like every one of those people I considered to be great sound designers. And they've worked on projects like The Quarry, or one of them, Nathan Moody. Shout out to Nathan, who's a good friend of mine now, who's like very open and works at Skywalker Sound, where you're like, oh man, he could be working on the next Star Wars game. And he's like willing to spend an hour just talking about sound and stuff with me. And also like the even bigger ones, I asked Mark Mangini, who's a 2-time Oscar winner and did the sound for Dune and for Blade Runner, the newest one. And Like just on a whim, I wrote him. So like, hey, would you be interested to like talk to me for an hour? I really enjoy your sound work. It's like one of the best work I've seen in movies, and I'd like to pick your brain. And he like in a few hours just wrote me back, yeah, sure, sounds fun. And that's something you don't expect. And I think maybe that's not my general outlook, but most of the people are friendly and open. And even if you get like a negative answer, chances are you're probably getting a positive reaction. If you're like just a normal person asking a normal question and just be polite and ask someone about, hey, can you talk to me like maybe for 15 minutes or half an hour about how to get into the games industry? Or even like, can you recommend me somewhere to go? Because they can send you either some talks or something that are really insightful that you might not find when you first start out because you have no idea what to look for and what kind of persons to listen to. Because, I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there nowadays. Just like you said, in the beginning, it was more like trying to find something in some kind of forum or writing the devs to get map makers. Now it's like an abundance of material and an abundance of stuff. But like reaching out to people and to developers, like if you wanted to go into development, doesn't matter what kind of area, maybe if you want to go into level design or your artists, be an artist, just look through your favorite games and look through the names of people that made this and try to find out like if they have a Twitter or something or email or some other social media and just write them like, hey, could you point me to something? I really enjoyed what you did there. It's like really inspiring and I want to go in that direction. And normally people will be glad to help you. I think that's the one thing that instantly comes to mind that is hopefully universal wisdom.
So thank you for sharing that. And, you know, I think that's fantastic wisdom and fantastic advice. You know, like a lot of people are afraid to ask because, and I can speak to this from a very personal level of being afraid to ask because, like, you know, I'm not saying you're exactly like me, but I'm, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if what I'm saying is like a common enough thing. But like, you're afraid to bother someone. You're afraid that you're going to be like being a pain, annoying them, what have you. But like, what you said is, you know, you can't be afraid. You just got to do it. And like, it sounds like, especially in your case, that it's been a fantastically positive experience. Now, I'm not trying to like make some implications on my end with that one. I'm just meaning, you know, you said you like sent out 10 emails and got like 10 positive responses and, you know, what have you. And that's like, that's fantastic. And like, it just goes to show that, you know, if you had been afraid to ask, you might not have sent out 10 emails. You might have sent like none out. And like, here you are now, you have like, you know, several guests potentially lined up or, you know, new contacts or new things to look into or what have you. Like, it's, you know, I just thank you for the advice. I think it's just fantastic because like, yeah, you know, if you're afraid to ask, nothing good will ever come, right? Like you have to be proactive, even in such a simplistic way. Now, Ben, I'm going to ask this question, and I feel that you might have already answered it. So my apologies if it's very straightforward. So I'm going to kind of like blend it into two questions, I guess. What is your, you know, I believe you said like Morrowind was like your favorite game. So if I'm wrong about that or I misunderstood, you know, by all means, please let me know what your favorite game is, as well as, you know, what game was it, and if was it your favorite game as well, that made you want to get into games, and like why? What was it about that game that made you be like, oh, this is my favorite, this is why I want to do this, or this is what I would like to try and do, or what have you?
Yeah, I would say that's always like a bit of a hard question to answer because I don't have like one favorite thing, but I have like several, depends on the time and place in my life or something. But just like I said, I think in the beginning, like one of the first ones where I was really like, this is like the best game ever was Morrowind, because I haven't seen something like that back then. And it was just so weird and otherworldly. And then it broke the fourth wall and it did so many things that games didn't do back then. So that was something what it constantly surprised me and engaged me. And just, I was just in awe of that game. And I think after that, even, it probably was Final Fantasy VII for sure, because I think that's the first game that made me cry. Don't want to spoil because you now have the remake, so maybe someone hasn't played it. But the story and the intensity of it was really great to me. And I would say after that, like from now, probably one of my favorite games. I know it's like a popular opinion nowadays, but I think it's Dark Souls. My love for it started with Demon's Souls, actually. That's the first game I played, but Dark Souls was the one that really like showed me this interesting thing of like bringing reality into the game. And what I mean by that is that for me, when I played this game and I learned about that in this world, you have people that try and try and fail and they slowly go insane. And it's a perfect analogy for you, the player, because either you finish the game and you change the world in some regard. I don't think you save the world, but it does something and you're like some kind of hero or at least some kind of important figure. Or if you don't, and if you like get frustrated and like the game drives you nuts and you just throw the controller away, then you somehow subconsciously like turning yourself into an NPC and your character probably in this world would be aimlessly wandering away and being insane. So that kind of like connection for me that blew my mind back then, this idea. And I mean, of course, all the other things like this strange world where it's like medieval, but it's not medieval, and it's magic, but it's all so strange. And it has some things of like Cthulhu style myths in it. And it has characters that actively lie. And you have like two characters that are telling you the exact opposite. And the game never tells you which one is right, because maybe none of them is right. And all those things, that was something that's constantly interesting me. And that's something that constantly interesting me about games, because I mean, it's nice to play some kind of AAA game, and I play them from time to time, so in between, and it's nice to have something very bombastic and cool looking or cool feeling mechanic. But where I think the medium truly shines is like those crevices where maybe an indie game or maybe also double or AAA game can get something really new and really exciting out there and uses like everything it has at its disposal. Because you have those books that like follow you for years, and you have those movies that make your mind go around in circles and think about things. For example, Memento is something that was something very new back then. Or, I mean, we could go on about movies, but I think we all know those kind of movies that have something new or like lie to the watcher, or the person that's like the protagonist lies to himself and it doesn't realize it until the end, or stuff like that. Something that hasn't been done before. And I feel in games, because you have this interactivity and sometimes even like online multiplayer, you can do many more things that we haven't yet explored. I just thinking about like Minecraft when it first started out, this like Lego type of playground. And then you could also do like servers where people could come together and build something together. I think there were also some kind of other games before that in that style, but that's what made it like really big. And people realized like this is something new, because it doesn't like, of course it has a story and some kind of ending, but it's not the thing of the game. The game is like the collaborative experimenting and building something, or even just like spending alone countless hours building a big castle, or looking how far you can like push the system. And there's people that like are building computers inside of Minecraft and building Tetris, working Tetris inside of Minecraft with their own circuits in there. So everything that goes into this direction of breaking a new barrier, either like story-wise or gameplay-wise or something else where you could like not really put your finger on there, that's always like really interesting to me. And there are a lot of examples I can think of in the last few years. I think Disco Elysium was a big hit, fortunately, and it's also like something very special. I don't think it has any specific game mechanic that makes it special, because it's just like back then more or less like a point and click slight RPG game with some random encounters, random chance throws, but it did it in a way and in a style that hasn't been done before, and that really brings something new to the table. And that's something what constantly motivates me and tells me that there's space for more of that kind of stuff. And yeah.
So, you know, thank you for walking me through like those, you know, your approach. I don't know if approach is the right word there. But down that lane, I guess. And, you know, I understand what you're saying. And, like, to comment or jump off of Dark Souls or Demon Souls or what have you, that's, you know, that's a very good point. And I think that's what draws a lot of people to it is, like, just the world in general, like the how it's not exactly straightforward, and it's obfuscated enough that you aren't gonna get it unless you go looking. But when you go looking, things start to make a lot of sense. And, you know, it's a really interesting story approach. I know a lot of other games have kind of taken a swing at it in the last handful of years since Demon's Souls really sprung off. You know, some have done it just as well and some have done it far worse, but, you know, I understand what you're saying, and I agree that is, like, an interesting approach where characters are kind of, like, human in the sense that they're lying to you, and it's not like they're lying because they're the villain or, you know, nefarious reasons, but they're just lying because their perception of what they're telling you or how the story is presenting itself to you, it's the perception from that person. And, like, that's a really interesting way to take it, you know, a really human way to take it when it comes to games. Because, you know, we are, like, when you explain something to someone, it's based on your perceptions. And, you know, that's not something a lot of games or movies or what have you do real well. So, you know, that's a good point. So thank you for bringing that one up. I like that point, especially from everything you said. Now, Ben, I do want to ask this, you know, we've jumping off of, you know, Morrowind, Final Fantasy VII, the Souls games, I guess, you know, encapsulate them there maybe. But was there a game that you enjoyed that you feel did not get enough credit, or, you know, didn't get enough attention, or however you would like to interpret that and run with it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know if I mentioned this one already, but it's also one of my favorite games is Soma. It's this underwater science fiction psychological thing that just, when I played it, I really, when I finished the conclusion, I almost didn't want to, like, go further, and it was such an intense feeling, and I just loved that game Soma, and those kind of games that go into this direction, I feel, are somehow oftentimes like indie hits or something, and then they get lost. And if I talk to people and they haven't heard of Soma, I urge everyone to play it. If you haven't played Soma, please play it. And it's also very, very important that you don't watch a let's play, but you control the character yourself. Even if the mechanics might be not your thing, but the story is absolutely worth it. It's one of the best stories that's ever been told in a video game, in my opinion. And one of the newer ones that's, I think, when it came out, yeah, end of May. It's very new. It's called Stasis Bone Totem, or Stasis. It's the second part of the Stasis game. The first one was, I think, from 2015 or something. It's like an isometric point and click sci-fi horror game. And I really liked the first one, but especially it's now the second one, Bone Totem, is just amazing in terms of immersion and in terms of production quality. Because if you look through it and maybe watch a video or something, and you see there's cutscenes in there, and you think it's a nice double A game or something. But if you then look at the developer, it's two brothers. So all the cutscenes in the game was done by just one person in the living room doing motion capture with their phone and acting all the characters out, and then just doing that all in, I think, Unreal Engine or Unity. I'm not sure, but it just blew me away how much love there is in this game, and how you can really feel like they are passionate about this game and what they achieved as a very small team. Because that's, it's just a massively great game, and I feel like probably the release has gone under somewhat. It has great reviews on Steam, but I feel like there it should be way more people should play this game because it's just great. So if you're like into sci-fi horror things, then that's probably the perfect game for you.
So, thank you for that. I never heard of Stasis, and I did a quick look while you were explaining it and talking about it. Mm-hmm. And it on paper, on the surface, it looks like it would be an interesting game. It kind of, the point and clickiness of it, or I guess it looked very much like I'm gonna say like Fallout, just because that's I don't know what the proper genre or term is for the Fallout games, and in my mind they're always just Fallout games. But then it looks like that, which is if you like those kind of games, it looks like it'd be fantastic. I'm going to take a look at it later. Obviously, not right now, not the time or the place, but it looks interesting enough to look more into. So thank you for that recommendation. And, if I'm not mistaken for Soma, and this isn't going to go down like story points or plot, spoiler mm-hmm. plots or what have you. Because like you said, from my understanding, I get what you're saying, but it's, you don't want to know too much. But if I'm not mistaken, I think they also made that game where you could remove the monster, so to say, or the threat. I don't know if I'm right about that one, but for whatever reason, my brain is telling me that was one of those games where they said if you don't like the oppressive horror or what have you, you can remove the oppressiveness but still have the world and everything. Don't quote me on that one because I could be wrong. But
it could be Dead or it could be Amnesia, but I'm not sure. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I heard about something like that. It could also be Soma, and yeah, as I said, it's also not like for the faint of heart. It's not like if you remove the monster and play through it that you're like having like just a great time and say, oh, that's a nice story. It's for me, it like really shook me. It was like I was white faced after playing it, after finishing it. And I still to this day, there are some moments where I like just think about the things that they imply there. And this game gets back into my head because, maybe it's just my personal opinion, but I know a lot of people that also were really impressed. But for me, it was like maybe also at the perfect time and the perfect hit. And it just touched me so deep inside of me. And I don't even know what it did to me. I don't know if I had fear or if it was like existential dread or something, maybe something also hope, like a mixture of everything. It was just so strange to me. And yeah, sorry, I could go on forever. I could bubble on forever. That's, yeah, Soma, play Soma.
So just, not to comment on Soma directly, but more the feeling. And, it's, I'm sure we've all experienced those feelings. And like, I understand the I don't want to say that conflict, but the difficulty of trying to like put it into words, right? Like, it's very simple to say, things like it makes you feel happy but scared, and existential dread. Like, it's very easy to say just those words, but the nuance behind them, the meaning, the context, the implication is always so difficult. But like, I think we can all relate to that, and it's always great to hear when someone has an experience with a game like that, because I don't know about you or anyone listening or what have you, but for me personally, it's always been few and far between for a game to do that in such a magical way. So I'm happy to hear that Soma has had the ability to, that was one of those games that impacted you like that. I'm just happy to hear that you were able to find and enjoy one of those games.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the good thing is now, as you already said, we've been gamers for quite some years. So in the beginning, there was maybe one of them every couple of years. But nowadays, you could also go back and like get a backlog going of old games that are still impressive. Just like Soma, or another one is like Spec Ops The Line is something that always gets discussed online. It's also, I played it like 10 or 15 years after release. I don't know how old it was, but I played it just because of that people are telling me like, this was one of the games that really like hit me hard and it did something impressive and you don't want to read about it, just like play it. And it really paid off. So the good thing is with like the growing catalog of games that we can, yeah, now get back to games we missed or where we weren't born yet even and play those. So yeah.
Yes, for some people especially, we're not even born yet. I feel old. So, Ben, I'm going to ask this one. You know, it's kind of, I don't know if this is going to have like some common themes or carryover themes from other questions or what have you. But, you know, given the freedom or opportunity or what have you, you know, what kind of game would you like to create or be a part of or what have you? Like, I don't know how to phrase that one specifically in your context as a sound designer, but, you know, what, given the freedom, what game would you like to be a part of?
Oh, if I had like the freedom and the money and the time to do it, like the perfect storm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, there's always the problem. If you have too much freedom, you will never get done with the project. So you need some kind of restriction. But I get your question. And yeah, the good thing is that like right now in my life, I'm working on exactly those games that I'd like to have in my life and like to play. I mean, it started with Skywind, which isn't finished yet, of course, but it's going strong and it's getting better and better and near completion every day. So that's something I really want to play myself when it's finished. So that's a thing I'm already working on or have worked on for quite a while. And then there's Combustion from 3D Realms, which is my newest project where I'm working on, which is like a mixture of, or I would say influences from Metal Gear Solid 1, from Final Fantasy 7, from like all the 90s PlayStation era great games, but lifted up into like a modern, almost modern state. And it's a dream project to have, to be honest. Like the main developer is called Fred, became like a friend of mine now because we instantly clicked and we had the same ideas and the same like mindset of what we liked and what we didn't like and what kind of direction we wanted to go in. So it's like just a dream to work on that. That's something that also was always like in the back of my mind. I always wanted to look at a game that looked a bit like PlayStation style. So yeah, that's now also in my arsenal. And then also, of course, Call of Saragna, which I told you about earlier on, because I saw that project and was like, oh yes, that's something I'd really like to play. I want to help finish it. So right now, to be honest, I work on all the projects that I want to see in the world. If I would think more about that, maybe sometime in the future, if the technology gets even better, some kind of VR title would be great, because with 3D sound plus VR, you can do some interesting things. And I think I'd really like to do something, maybe even some kind of horror game that leans hard into the sound design, because you can do some psychoacoustic sounds and like people whispering in your ear, and it can get pretty realistic and pretty scary. So that's something that would be also cool.
So thank you for sharing that. And I'm happy to hear that the games that, you know, that given freedom, you would work on are the games you're already working on. That's great to hear. You know, I imagine a lot of people would be jealous or envious to hear that, you know, that those are the projects you're getting to contribute to, are the ones that you would, you know, if you could, you would be trying to man or fund yourself or what have you. And, you know, you said something and it made me think of a question that I've not put too much thought into, and partly because I don't have VR. I play it whenever I can borrow it, more or less. And you know, you mentioned like the sound, you know, doing sounds for like VR or for horror, that kind of stuff. I'm curious what you, and this is probably going to be a really badly formed question, because I'm struggling to think of like how to say it in a way that other people are going to understand. You'll probably get it, but you know, how crap, for things like VR, obviously the way you would approach sound is going to be different. So what I'm wondering is, you know, and not even for VR in general, because you can do it with headphones or what have you, but I don't think this is used a whole lot. And what, oh crap, what have I done to myself? in terms of sound design for something like that, obviously it's going to need a different kind of setup. You're going to have to do like binaural, where it's going to have microphones that are set up that are going to emulate the actual an actual person and ears and all of that fun stuff. What have I done? Do you think that's going to be something that is approached a little more with the hopefully add like the more adoption of VR, with, you know, horror games kind of getting like another, you know, another boom with the newer Amnesia game, which I'm sure will potentially lead to like another boom from other people wanting to do a similar thing again, similar to what Amnesia did 15 years ago now or so. So like the question really is, when it comes to sound design, recording, all of that fun stuff, how do you feel about the like the evolving technologies to do something with binaural audio that would allow for better immersion? Like, do you think that's going to be something that's picked up? Do you think that's something that you're excited to maybe explore with or what have you? I'm sorry, that's a horrible question, and I don't know what I've just done to you.
No, it's fine. Let me just like pick it apart one by one and go through it, because that's very interesting. Maybe just a very, very quick reminder for people that might not be familiar with the term binaural. Binaural recording is essentially you have a microphone that's like a shaped like a hat with two ears, and there's two microphones in each ear, and it has like a certain distance between the ears, which is like the, I would say, like the standard distance between people's ears on average. And if you record it like that and listen back on headphones, it has an amazing like 3D effect. So the best way of testing this is there's a sound that I can share with you. You can put it in the notes if you want to. It's just a knocking on a door sound, and it's behind you slightly to the right. And no matter where you sit, if you first hear it with headphones, you're either gonna get like goosebumps or you're gonna turn around inadvertently. Because it's so realistic, because it works. The problem with games is you don't sit still. So you move your head around, you move your character around. So binaural doesn't really work other than for like linear stuff where you can't influence that. But what you can do is, for example, use ambisonics. And I don't know if you're familiar with that, but I will just like quickly go through it as well. So just we have like the full picture. Ambisonics is microphones that are not just pointed left and right channels, but also up, down, and front and back. So you have essentially like the reverse thing of a surround sound system. You have the surround sound recording rig, and you put that somewhere and you record on all of them. And then you have a 3D sound image, and you can either like render it out and move around, or you can like use those all those recordings and dynamically change that. So ambisonic recording is already used for games because we have a lot of 3D sound now. And I think it's already also used for VR for more of the ambient stuff. But otherwise, a lot of stuff is actually recorded in mono, because you place them somewhere in the world and then the world affects it, because you know, if you have this zombie moaning, it could be a zombie moaning out in the field or in some kind of cave. So you have that reverb, and you can't like really record everything for every iteration. So you have to have some kind of clean sound. Putting that in air quotes, because but you have to have some kind of clean mono sound for a lot of the things, and then let the engine handle that. And in the last years, the engines, especially sound engines, have gotten better and better. You can see that in like the newest Unreal Engine, where they did like a huge part of it was about the sound engine and how it does convolution reverb, which is another topic you can read about. I don't want to explain everything, but it's gotten more and more realistic. And I think to get to like the end of your question about maybe if that gives horror games a new boost, I think it can. And I think it already has some great ideas that I probably few people know about, because when the Facebook Oculus wasn't a thing yet, it already with like the first Oculus dev kit, there were some very interesting games out there. There was one game that was basically more like a tech demo, but it was like you were sitting on a desk and trying to like solve a riddle, and you had a ghost that was making noises and also like whispering in your ear. But the gameplay element was that you couldn't look at the ghost. If you look at the ghost, you die. So you had to constantly avert your eyes and have it like somewhat in the periphery, and you could see like a little bit of it, but not much. And that was like an intense experience for people. And the second thing that I found even more interesting, that I also don't think many people know, there was this one game where you would go into VR, you would be like in your home, in your living room, picking up a controller, and you would also need the controller for it, and playing a game in the game on the TV. So at first that sounds like, yeah, like a nice silly idea, but what that meant for people, for many people that play this, after a few minutes, you were kind of forgetting that you were sitting in VR in the living room. And it was more like, oh, I'm sitting on the couch and playing this game. And so you would play like this PlayStation game, look at the monitor, just like you would do in your real life, like sitting on the couch playing a PlayStation game. And it was a horror game, like kind of Resident Evil style controls, very simple. But then it started to bleed into the real world. So suddenly you would hear above you, in the floor above you, like a body drop and being like dragged across the floor. And some of the Let's Players I saw it play, afterwards they were like, I somehow forgot that I could just get rid of the glasses and get out of the virtual world. Because they just put down the controller and then they were in this living room and had this very slight moment of thinking or feeling that this virtual world was a bit like the real world and getting really scared. And that's something that is really interesting to me. Could potentially also get very, very, very dangerous for people. Because, I don't know, maybe if you can make VR even more immersive and you can make it even more that you don't... Like, if you have lighter headsets nowadays, it's also, if you play for a couple of hours, you kind of blend them out, just like you would, like, if you have glasses on or something else. At some point, like, your body accepts that is now a part of you, so you can start to blend those things out. And, that's where it gets into really immersive and interesting territory. And so I think, yeah, if VR gets, like, a second, third, or whatever point we are now, third, fifth wind, then I think especially for horror games, if we can even up the immersion more, this can get really great. We already have some examples. Resident Evil, for example, was pretty good in VR. I mean, it's still in the infancy, but it has some... I think it had some great effects if it worked as intended, and if not, you got those disconnects. What I mean by that, there's this one scene like in the beginning of Final Fantasy, Resident Evil, where you get chased by someone and your character puts his hand up across his face to like block someone attacking, and you get this knife stuck through your hand. And for me, I instinctively did the same. Like, I put my hand up just like as the character put it up. So I got this effect of, for a split second, feeling pain in my palm. Just like very, very subtle, very sharp, short pain. And I was blown away. I was like, yeah, this is great. But as soon as you don't do that, you have this disconnect and it doesn't work anymore. So the technology isn't there yet exactly. So it's more like you have to like act out your character while you're playing, and you have somehow to know what he does for it to work. So we have still those gaps to do. But yeah, if this all gets like more dynamic, and if you have like dynamic things where you can move your hands always in real time and characters like would just react to your body movements and to your way of doing stuff, then I think that's going to be really interesting. But yeah, I think we are still way far away from that, because that's a lot of things to do and a lot of technology to build and input controls to build. And yeah, that was a long rumble.
And, you know, thank you, Ben. I appreciate that you understood what I was trying to ask, because, you know, I asked a bunch of, I just said a bunch of gibberish, basically. And, you know, it was enough for you to actually try and understand. And I didn't know about ambisonics, I think is what you called mm-hmm. it. I didn't know about that. And like, you know, you saying that, it makes far more sense why that would be easier to do than binaural, or, you know, setting that up, or you know, how recording in mono and then, like, you know, sticking the zombie in the cave and setting up the reverb and, you know, what have you, what have you. So, you know, thank you for walking me through and anyone else through that, because that's really interesting. And it's also a really good point about, like, the VR, how we're still kind of, we're still a little bit a ways for preventing immersion breaking, as you, you know, pointed out with the holding your hand up, that if you don't do that, that's not what you do. It's, you know, it's, you're going to immediately kind of cut out. But, you know, but thank you either way for walking through that. And that's a really interesting view, especially for someone that, like me, that has no idea about this kind of stuff and just has like a tangent, not tangent, has like a rough understanding of things in general that obviously aren't the same in this case.
Yeah, I think, I mean, binaural is great for some stuff. For example, if you're like listening to a music recording in binaural, there are a couple of live recordings in binaural that are really amazing. But it only works if you're like sitting in your living room, like laid back and just listening to it. Because if you start to move around, like doing chores or something, and you turn your head and the singer is always on your right side, then it instantly breaks the immersion. So that's something to keep in mind. I mean, there are like algorithms that like make binaural sound out of sounds you have in game, but yeah, as far as I'm aware, and I'm not like deep into it, but as far as I'm aware, like ambisonics is the current thing to go through, or of course mono sounds, which I'm mostly doing. I'm doing mostly mono sounds, and then like stereo recordings for ambiences, where it's not interesting where it comes from, because if you have like a wind bed around you, then probably it comes from everywhere, so it doesn't matter. And otherwise, I do like monos things or even stereo things with like distancing or
Again, thank you for that. You know, because like I said, I'm very weak understanding of sound in general. So that's awesome. So thank you so much. Now, Ben, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. However, I do want to ask this because I like asking this question because, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand with the whole point of what I'm trying to do and talk more about, you know, people related to the industry as people, as who they are. So outside of games, what is it that you do? What do you do to relax? What do you do to have fun? That, and if it is all game related, that is also completely valid. But, you know, I like to ask just in case, you know, you do something that's not game related and, you know, it's a core part of who you are, you know?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, of course, games, gaming with my friends, especially like co-op games, is like currently the only thing where I play like a lot, because we like as a friend group just get into, currently we're playing with Valheim and we're just building stuff and just talking to each other, like just having fun. So that's like the gaming part. But outside of gaming, of course, field recording, as I already said, it's related to gaming because I mostly do it for games, but it's like out in nature and it has this nice contrast of not sitting in front of your computer and doing something. That's something that is really relaxing. And yeah, I think besides that, the only thing that might be interesting is I'm into like cold exposure and ice bathing. So in the winter, I'd like to just break open a lake and just get in there for like 2 minutes or more. And that's something that relaxes and grounds me and has also been like really beneficial for my health. So this Wim Hof method is the one I'm doing, is like ice bathing and breathing. And that's something that's like my main thing I do to relax, and that keeps me like healthy and active.
Well, awesome. I'm happy that that works for you. You know, the ice bathing obviously is what I meant by that. not Valheim, or, you know, spending time with your friends. And I only say it that way because, you know, that's probably something that's very intimidating to people to, as you put it, just crack open a lake in the winter and, you know, dip in. Yeah. But no, I'm happy that works for you. I personally kind of been interested in trying such a thing, but I'm terrified of it, you know? So like, I'm happy you have the, you know, works for you, and, you know, power to you to have the bravery to do that, you know? Like, I don't know how to phrase the compliment, yeah. But, you know,
let me tell you, it's not bravery, it's my stubbornness, because I also used to hate the cold. I was like turning the shower on, waiting for it to get warm and then get in. So that was my start. So don't worry about that. You're going to be fine. Don't just like break open ice and jump in. It's like you have to gradually get into it. And maybe it's something for you, maybe not. But if you like gradually go into it and like pushing yourself a little bit, then yeah.
So thank you as well for anyone that's listening, myself included. If you've ever been interested, start small, like the shower, and, you know, build up from there, or technically build down, I guess, because you're, anyway, Ben, like I said, I don't want to take too much more of your time up. However, you know, if there was anything else you wanted to discuss, a cool game you wanted to mention, you know, what you're doing, more about your podcast, maybe, you know, can fit easily right here if you'd like, or something you just feel more people should be aware of, by all means, the floor is yours. As well, please let everyone know where they can find more information about you, which I'll also include in episode description.
Thank you. Yeah, I think I mentioned probably all the games I'm like that came to mind now, but I think all games are beautiful, so if you don't like a game, don't hate it. That's probably something I'd like to shout out, because there are people working on it, and usually they put a lot of love and effort in it. So if you don't like it, just ignore it and don't like bring it down. Yeah, and as you said, I have my own podcast called Field and Foley, where we talk about field recording and Foley, but essentially like with audio people about all that stuff, also about their personal experiences or like how they did certain sounds in games, which is always interesting. And I think it's also interesting for people not like very familiar with sound, because we also go over basic concepts sometimes, or like just, yeah, as I said, like just funny stories from production. Yeah, and you can find me on Twitter under my name, Ben Reichstein, or under the Field and Foley podcast. And yeah, otherwise, look out for Combustion. Hopefully you'll get a new trailer soon, maybe something for Gamescom, we will see. And if you're into the 90s, Call of Saragna is something that is really a label of love, and I don't think a lot of people know about yet. So yeah, give that a look, and if you like it, wishlist it or even become a Patreon member. Thank you.
Awesome. You know, so again, thank you, Ben, for sharing that. I will definitely be sure to include that information in the description. And, you know, like I will say this, you know, as I spoke with Fred previously about Combustion, not to spend too much time name dropping and or what have you, but yeah, you know, I agree that, you know, everyone should check out Combustion. It looks fantastic. PlayStation graphics inspired by Metal Gear. You know, something that I hooked on was Fred's his approach to world building. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of coming together as his oil rig needed Pizza Hut or pizza places and HR. So, you know, like I'm looking forward to Combustion as well, is what I'm saying. And I agree that people should look into it. You know, not to speak ill to any of the other things you mentioned, just, you know, I'm going to plug Fred. He gave me his time as well. And as well, you know, I've listened to an episode of Field and Foley. I thought it was really interesting. You know, so like, I agree, if you're interested tangentially and would like to, you know more, and you're not a sound designer, but you want to have a better understanding or whatever, I would recommend taking a listen to an episode or two or three or what have you, because it's interesting to hear the approach and like just learning more about something that, you know, that's otherwise invisible in like 90% of the time, and then learning just how much work goes into it being invisible. And like, you mm-hmm. know, when I went through for design, one of the things we were told for typography, and I think it applies here, is good typography is invisible. You don't notice it. It's just, it's there. It exists. Bad typography stands out to everyone. And I think that's very applicable to sound design. Like when it's a good sound, it's there, it just exists, and it helps, and it's, you know, you don't think anything of it. But like, you know, not to speak ill to stock sound or anyone that uses it, but there's some stock sound this probably grinds you more than anyone else, but like, you know, when it's a bad sound, you know, when it's overused, you know, when it's undermixed or what have you. So like, you know, it's interesting to hear the approach is all I'm saying for Field and Foley to hear, you know, how you stay invisible, so to say, as well as getting to hear interesting things like, you know, creating a Google Maps setup for all of the waterfalls in your area that you can walk to easily, right?
Yeah.
So, Ben, like I said, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. And I do want to let you get on with your day. So if there wasn't anything else, I'll let you get on with your Friday.
No, nothing else. Thank you. And yeah, have a nice evening.
So thanks again to Ben for making time to have this conversation with me. And thank you for joining us on the Red Tunic podcast, as well as a special thanks to Ronald Jenkins for the use of the music from the title track from Roadsteep. And be sure to check out the episode description for links to socials, websites, and other means that allow you to learn more about or support Ben and the podcast. While you're doing that, also be sure to like, follow, and be sure to share if those you think might also enjoy it. Thanks. Till next time.